Picture a chilly December morning in 2013. Protesters link arms across a San Francisco street, blocking sleek private coaches ferrying Google employees to their Silicon Valley campus. This wasn't your typical class warfare. The anger wasn't directed at wealthy individuals, but at something more systemic, a digital economy that seemed to lift some boats while sinking entire neighborhoods. Housing near Google bus stops had become 20% more expensive than comparable areas, pricing out longtime residents even as the company created thousands of jobs and offered free services to millions. This scene captures something we all feel but struggle to articulate. Our economy isn't broken by accident. It's running exactly as programmed, just on outdated software written centuries ago for a different world. We're trying to force digital networks designed for connection and distribution to serve an extractive, growth-obsessed operating system that treats humans as expensive inefficiencies. The result? Wealth concentrates at unprecedented levels while the middle class hollows out, and we blame technology instead of questioning the economic code itself. Consider the auto attendance system. A company replaces its receptionist and saves money, but you pay with your time navigating endless menus. One business's efficiency gain becomes everyone else's efficiency loss. Yet refusing to automate means competitive disadvantage. These externalized costs circle back as reduced sales and lost intelligence. That receptionist gathered insights and made judgment calls no menu tree can replicate. Before industrialization, business resembled a peer-to-peer bazaar. The Crusades opened trade routes, and returning soldiers replicated the Middle Eastern model. People exchanged goods and ideas directly, spurring innovations in milling and finance. Pete the Wainwright bought quality oats from Joe, not just to keep a customer, but because he needed Joe's wife to make his wagon wheels. Guild systems standardized prices, trained apprentices, and shared best practices. Members collectively took Sundays off without competitive disadvantage. This medieval economy thrived. People ate more, worked less, grew healthier. But as merchants gained wealth, aristocrats watched their feudal advantage evaporate. Nobles captured this energy through lawmaking, taxing bazaars, breaking guilds, outlawing local currencies, granting monopoly charters. Industrialization wasn't about efficiency. It was about minimizing human labor's value to restore power at the top. The problem isn't technology, but the underlying business model where growth became an end rather than a means. Digital platforms amplify human nature through machines, creating extreme winners and losers dynamics. Giants like Amazon, Netflix, and iTunes centralize social reality. Everyone encounters identical recommendations and algorithms. These aren't peer-to-peer systems, but growth machines, where millions purchase from a handful of sellers. Contrast this with eBay, which connects buyers directly to sellers, where most sellers are real humans with used items and ratings ensure integrity rather than directing consumers toward particular products. Some platforms resist these power law dynamics. Bandcamp caters to less established artists, charges lower commissions, and eschews download counts for discovery tools mimicking physical record stores. Sites like Bandcamp, Etsy, and Indiegogo prove digital platforms don't inherently create monopolies. They only do so when programmed for mass production strategies, directed consumer choice, minimal human intervention, volume sales, and monopoly control. Social media continues preventing real people from benefiting from growth. Struggling to extract value from users, internet companies developed a new currency: likes, views, reblogs, favorites. Instagram sold for $1 billion despite zero revenue, valued for its 49.6 million daily likes. Tumblr sold for $1.1 billion with negative $13 million revenue, valued for its 900 posts per second. The real value isn't advertising, but data mined from our social activity. Users aren't Facebook's customers, but its product, evidenced by controversy when Facebook conducted psychological experiments without consent. This simulated bazaar rewards friendship quantity over quality. We engage with metrics rather than humans, trusting peer recommendations over professional expertise while real journalists lose jobs. Artists perform for big data computers, often resorting to sensationalism to maintain attention. Big data's fundamental flaw? All data is history. Using it for innovation is like driving while staring in the rearview mirror. More unsettling, it relies on correlations that make no human sense. Metadata, when you make calls, their duration, your location, cursor hover times, proves far more valuable than content. With hundreds of millions generating tens of thousands of data points, researchers make eerily accurate predictions without understanding why they work. For marketers, prediction isn't enough. If big data shows 80% of people sharing certain traits will diet, algorithms target the remaining 20% with weight loss messaging. These algorithms reduce consumer spontaneity, corralling people toward outcomes matching their statistical profiles. Companies abandon unpredictable R&D for data analysis, believing they can predict next quarter's desires, becoming only as good as the data science firms they hire, often the same ones their competitors use. The sharing economy exemplifies digital industrialism's sleight of hand. Platforms like Airbnb and Uber monetize previously idle assets for corporate growth. Despite community-focused marketing, 87% of Airbnb hosts vacate their homes to rent them. These platforms transform homes into amateur hotels and car owners into unlicensed taxi drivers, exploiting regulatory arbitrage. Uber's cheaper-than-a-taxi pricing isn't technological magic, but predatory pricing funded by venture capital. The endgame becomes clear when considering Uber investor Google's self-driving car development. The sharing economy isn't about including more value creators, but transitioning toward full automation, first replacing skilled workers with unskilled ones, then eliminating humans entirely. Corporations were designed to amplify shareholder power, allowing feudal lords to preserve wealth in emerging free markets. Kings granted exclusive monopolies to merchants in exchange for investment rights. This original programming, extract value, eliminate local markets, expand empire, still runs today. Digital distributism offers an alternative. Instead of digitizing industrial extraction to grow capital, our technologies can distribute value creation for sustainable economies. Where digital industrialism creates platform monopolies, digital distributism enables worker-owned cooperatives with unprecedented complexity and security. The steady-state enterprise rejects infinite growth, focusing instead on generating sufficient revenue to pay employees well and serve customers effectively. Rather than pursuing acquisitions or IPOs, companies aim for sustainable equilibrium, staying in the game as long as possible. Family businesses exemplify this approach, thinking in generations rather than quarters. They carry little debt, retain talent better, and outperform non-family businesses financially. Even nature demonstrates that perpetual growth isn't necessary. Ecosystems find optimal ranges, organisms reach maturity. Digital literally refers to our fingers, the human digits we use to build and program. The maker movement represents people reclaiming production from the periphery, using digital tools to retrieve human values abandoned during industrialization. Industrial thinking treats digital technology as another way to remove humans, but a distributed approach recognizes that technology should amplify human creativity and connection. We're witnessing a genuine rebirth of lost values. Renaissance perspective painting emphasized a single viewpoint. Digital holograms recover wholeness and relativity. Renaissance ships mapped channels for conquest. Satellites reveal a finite biosphere to protect. Renaissance literature celebrated individual heroes. Our era promotes collective storytelling through gaming and social media. The principles aren't new. Distributism, originating in papal encyclicals, sought a middle path between Gilded Age capitalism and Marxism, arguing that private property is a human right, but gross inequality is immoral. It advocates for widespread distribution of production means, with workers owning their tools and earning ownership stakes. A digital renaissance isn't regression, but recursion, rediscovering old values in contemporary contexts. Companies can implement these principles incrementally, letting users create value, sharing ownership with workers, establishing networked guilds, and valuing human labor. Success should be measured by competence, value creation, participation, community investment, and sustainability, not growth alone. The blocked Google bus wasn't just a protest against inequality. It was a demand to reprogram our economy. We have the tools, abundance, and digital networks to distribute rather than concentrate value. What we need is courage to rewrite the operating system. The choice isn't between progress and tradition. It's between extraction and distribution, between outdated code and something better. The digital revolution hasn't failed us. We've just been running the wrong program.